Most of them are regular army troops, but there are a few stormtroopers in the crowd, too. There aren't too many of either still up here. Most of them headed on down the ramps a few minutes ago.
Probably gone to search the city for us, Luke murmured.
Yeah.
Han eased up to look over the analyzer. The top of Luke's X-Wing was just visible over the nose of a W-23 space barge.
Looks like R2's still in Luke's ship.
Yeah, but I saw them doing something over that way. They may have put a restraining bolt on him.
We can handle that.
Han scanned as much of the area around them as he could see.
I think we can make it to the X-Wing without being spotted. You told me on the trip here that you had a beckon call for the Lady Luck, right?
Right. But it's not going to do me any good. With all these boxes around, there's no place I can set it down without opening myself to fire.
That's okay,
Han told him, feeling a tight smile twist at his lip. Luke might have the Force, and Irenez might be able to climb stairs without getting winded. But he would bet heavily that he could outdo both of them in sheer chicanery.
You just get it moving toward you when I give the word.
He switched off the comlink.
We're going over to the X-Wing,
he told Luke and Irenez, adjusting his grip on his blaster.
You ready?
He got two acknowledgements, and with a last look around the area, headed as quickly as silence permitted across the floor. He reached the space barge lying across their path without incident, paused there to let the others catch up. Shh, Luke hissed. Han froze, pressing himself against the barge's corroded hull. Not 4 meters away, a stormtrooper standing guard was starting to turn in their direction. Clenching his teeth, Han raised his blaster. But even as he did so, his peripheral vision caught Luke's hand making some sort of gesture. And suddenly, the Imperial spun around in the opposite direction, pointing his blaster rifle toward a patch of empty floor.
He thinks he heard a noise, Luke whispered. Let's go.
Han nodded and sidled around to the other side of the barge. A few seconds later, they were crouched beside the X-Wing's landing skids.
R2,
Han stage whispered upward.
Come on, short stuff. Wake up.
There was a soft and rather indignant beep from the top of the X-Wing, which meant the Imperial's restraining bolt hadn't shut the droid down entirely, just blocked out his control of the X-Wing systems. Good.
Okay,
he called to the droid.
Get your comm sensor warmed up, and get ready to record.
Another beep.
Now what?
Irenez asked.
Now we get cute,
Han told her, pulling out his comlink.
Lando, you ready?
As ready as I'm gonna be.
The other came back.
Okay. When I give the signal, turn on your beckon call and get the Lady Luck moving. When I tell you again, shut it off. Got that?
Got it. I hope you know what you're doing.
Trust me.
Han looked at Luke.
You got your part figured out?
Luke nodded, holding up his lightsaber.
I'm ready.
Okay. Lando, go!
For a long moment, nothing happened. Then, through the background noise of the landing area, came the distinctive whine of repulsor lifts being activated. Half standing up, Han was just in time to see the Lady Luck rise smoothly up from among the other docked ships. From somewhere in the general vicinity came a shout, followed by the multiple flash of blaster fire. Another three weapons opened up almost immediately, all four tracking the Lady Luck as it made a somewhat ponderous turn and began floating south toward Lando's hiding place.
You know it'll never get there,
Irenez muttered in Han's ear.
As soon as they figure out where it's going, they'll be all over him.
That's why it's not going to get to him,
Han countered, watching the Lady Luck closely. Another couple of seconds, and every stormtrooper and Imperial soldier in the place ought to have his attention solidly fixed on the rogue ship.
Ready? Luke, now!
And suddenly Luke was gone, a single leap taking him to the top of the X-Wing. Over the commotion, Han heard the snap hiss as Luke ignited his lightsaber, could see the green glow reflected from the nearest ships and equipment. The glow and sound shifted subtly as Luke made a short slice. Restraining bolts off, Luke called down. Now?
Not yet,
Han told him. The Lady Luck was about a quarter of the way to the far wall, blaster bolts still scattering off its armored underside.
I'll tell him when. You get ready to fly interference.
Right.
The X-Wing rocked slightly as Luke moved forward and dropped into the cockpit, its own repulsor lifts beginning to whine as R2 activated them. A whine that no one else out in all that confusion had a hope of hearing. The Lady Luck was halfway to the wall now.
Okay, Lando, shut down,
Han ordered.
R2, your turn. Call it back this way.
With full access again to the X-Wing's transmitters, it was a simple task for the droid to duplicate the signal from Lando's beck and call. The Lady Luck shuddered to a halt, reoriented itself to the new call, and started across the landing area again toward the X-Wing. It wasn't something the Imperials had expected. For a second, the blaster fire faltered as the soldiers chasing the yacht skidded to a halt, and by the time the fire resumed in earnest, the Lady Luck was nearly to the X-Wing. Now? Luke called.
Now!
Han called back.
Put her down and clear us a path.
R2 twittered, and the Lady Luck again halted in midair, this time dropping smoothly to the ground. There was a shout that sounded like triumph from the Imperials. But if so, it was the shortest triumph on record. The Lady Luck touched down, and without warning, the X-Wing leaped into the air. Pulling a tight curve around the Lady Luck, Luke swooped back down, wingtip lasers spitting a corridor of destruction across the startled soldiers' line of approach. Given time, the Imperials would regroup. Han had no intention of giving them that time.
Come on!
He snapped to Irenez, leaping to his feet and making a mad dash for the Lady Luck. He was probably on the ramp before the soldiers even noticed him, and was up and through the hatch before anyone was able to get off a shot.
Stay here and guard the hatch,
he shouted back as Irenez charged in behind him.
I'm going to pick up Lando.
Luke was still roaring around, creating havoc as Han scrambled into the cockpit and dived into the pilot's seat, throwing a quick look at the instruments as he did so. All the systems seemed to be ready, and anything that wasn't was going to have to do so on the way up.
Grab onto something!
He shouted back to Irenez, and lifted. The stormtrooper Lando had mentioned as being near his position was nowhere in sight as Han brought the Lady Luck swinging over to the pile of shipping boxes. Luke was right with him, the X-Wing's lasers making a mess of the landing area floor as he kept the Imperials pinned down. Han dropped the ship to within half a meter of the floor. Entrance ramps swiveled toward the boxes. There was a flicker of motion, visible for just a second through the cockpit's side viewport.
We've got him! Irenez shouted from the hatch. Go!
Han swiveled the ship around, throwing full power to the repulsor lifts and heading upward into one of the huge exit ducts overhead. There was a slight jolt as he cleared the magnetic seal on one end, and then they were out in the clear air, screaming hard for space. Four TIE fighters were skulking around just above the city, waiting for trouble. But they apparently weren't waiting for it to come this quickly. Luke got three of them on the fly, and Han took out the fourth.
Nothing like cutting it close to the wire,
Lando panted as he slid into the co-pilot seat and got busy with his board.
What have we got?
Looks like a couple more dropships coming in,
Han told him, frowning.
What are you doing?
Running a multi-sensor airflow analysis, Lando said. It'll show up any large irregularities on the hull. Like if someone's attached a homing beacon to us.
Han thought back to that escape from the first Death Star, and their near-disastrous flight to Yavin with just such a gadget snugged aboard.
I wish I had a system like that for the Falcon.
It'd never work, Lando commented dryly. Your hull's so irregular already, the system would go nuts just trying to map it.
He keyed off the display.
Okay, we're clear.
Great.
Han threw a glance out to the left.
We're clear of those dropships, too. They don't have a hope of catching us now.
Yes, but that might,
Irenez said, pointing at the mid-range scope, which showed an Imperial Star Destroyer behind them, already leaving orbit and moving into pursuit.
Great,
Han growled, kicking in the main drive. Using it this close to the ground wasn't going to do Nukov's plant life any good, but that was the least of his worries at the moment.
Luke!
I see it!
Luke's voice came back through the comm speaker.
Any ideas besides running for it?
I think running for it sounds like a great idea,
Han said.
Lando?
Calculating the jump now, the other said, busy with the nav computer. It ought to be ready by the time we're far enough out.
There's another ship coming up from below,
Luke said.
Right out of the jungle.
That's ours,
Irenez said, peering over Han's shoulder.
You can parallel them by changing course to 126 Mark 30.
The Star Destroyer was picking up speed, the scope now showing a wedge of TIE fighters sweeping along ahead of it.
We'd do better to split up,
Han said.
No! Stay with our ship,
Irina said.
Cena said we've got help coming.
Han took another look at the ship climbing for deep space. A small transport, with a fair amount of speed, but not much else going for it. Another look at the approaching TIE fighters.
They're gonna be in range before we can make the jump, Lando murmured, echoing Han's thought.
Yeah. Luke, you still there?
Yes. I think Lando's right.
I know. Any way you can pull that Niklon stunt again? You know, scramble the pilots' minds a little?
There was a noticeable hesitation from the comm.
I don't think so,
Luke said at last.
I don't think it's good for me to do that sort of thing. You understand?
Han didn't really, but it probably didn't matter. For a moment, he'd forgotten that he wasn't in the Falcon with a pair of quad lasers and shields and heavy armor. The Lady Luck, for all Lando's modifications, wasn't anything to take on even confused TIE fighter pilots with.
All right, skip it, he told Luke. Cena just better be right about this help of hers.
The words were hardly out of his mouth when a flash of brilliant green light shot past the Lady Luck's cockpit canopy.
TIE fighters, coming in from port side,
Lando snapped.
They're trying to cut us off,
Luke said.
I'll get rid of them.
Without waiting for comment, he dropped his X-Wing below the Lady Luck's vector, and with a roar of main drive, swung off to the left toward the incoming TIE fighters.
Watch yourself,
Han muttered after him, giving the rear scope another look. The pursuing batch of fighters was still closing fast.
Your ship got any weapons?
He asked Irinez.
No, but it's got good armor and plenty of deflector power,
she told him.
Maybe you should get ahead of them. Let them take the brunt of the attack.
Yeah, I'll think about it,
Han said, wincing at the woman's ignorance of this kind of fight. TIE pilots didn't much care which ship was first in line when they attacked, and sitting close enough to another ship to hide in its deflector shield was to give up your maneuverability. Off to port side, the incoming group of TIE fighters scattered out of the way as Luke drove through their formation, wingtip lasers blazing away madly. A second wave of Imperials behind the first closed to intercept as Luke pulled a hard 180 and swung back on the tails of the first wave.
Han held his breath.
But even as he watched, the X-Wing managed somehow to thread its way unscathed through the melee and take off at full throttle at an angle from the Lady Luck's vector, the whole squadron hot on his tail.
Well, so much for that group,
Irinez commented.
And maybe for Luke, too,
Lando countered harshly, as he jabbed at the comm.
Luke, you all right?
I got a little singed, but everything's still running,
Luke's voice came back.
I don't think I can get back to you.
Don't try,
Han told him.
As soon as you're clear, jump to light speed and get out of here.
What about you?
Luke's last word was partially drowned out by a sudden twitter from the comm.
That's the signal,
Irina said.
Here they come.
Han frowned, searching the sky outside the front viewport. As far as he could see, there was nothing out there but stars. And then, in perfect unison, three large ships suddenly dropped out of hyperspace into triangular formation directly ahead of them. Lando inhaled sharply.
Those are old dreadnought cruisers.
That's our help,
Irina said.
Straight down the middle of the triangle. They'll cover for us.
Right,
Han gritted, shifting the Lady Luck's vector a few degrees and trying to coax a little more speed out of its engines. The New Republic had a fair number of dreadnoughts, and at 600 meters long each, they were impressive enough warships. But even three of them working together could be hard-pressed to take out an Imperial Star Destroyer. Apparently, the dreadnought's commander agreed. Even as the Star Destroyer behind the Lady Luck opened up with its huge turbolaser batteries, the dreadnoughts began pelting the larger ship with a furious barrage of ion cannon blasts, trying to temporarily knock out enough of its systems for them to get away.
That answer your question?
Han asked Luke.
I think so,
Luke said dryly.
Okay, I'm gone. Where do I meet you?
You don't,
Han told him. He didn't like that answer much, and he suspected Luke would like it even less. But it couldn't be helped. With a dozen TIE fighters currently between the Lady Luck and the X-Wing, suggesting a rendezvous point on even what was supposed to be a secure comm channel would be an open invitation for the Empire to send their own reception committee on ahead.
Lando and I can handle the mission on our own,
he added.
If we run into any problems, we'll contact you through Coruscant.
All right,
Luke said. Sure enough, he didn't sound happy about it, but he had enough sense to recognize there was no other safe way.
Take care, you two.
See ya,
Han said, and cut the transmission.
So now it's my mission too, huh?
Lando growled from the co-pilot seat, his tone a mixture of annoyance and resignation.
I knew it. I just knew it.
Cena's transport was into the triangular pocket between the dreadnoughts now, still driving for all it was worth. Han kept the Lady Luck with them, staying as close above the transport's tail as he could without getting into its exhaust.
You got some particular place you'd like us to drop you?
He asked, looking back at Irenez. She was gazing out the viewport at the underside of the dreadnought they were passing beneath.
Actually, our commander was rather hoping you'd accompany us back to our base, she said.
Han threw a look at Lando. There had been something in her tone that implied the request was more than merely a suggestion.
And just how hard was your commander hoping this? Lando asked.
Very much.
She dropped her gaze from the dreadnought.
Don't misunderstand. It's not an order. But when I spoke to him, the commander seemed extremely interested in meeting again with Captain Solo.
Han frowned.
Again?
Those were his words.
Han looked at Lando, found the other looking back at him.
Some old friend you never mentioned? Lando asked.
I don't recall having any friends who own dreadnoughts,
Han countered.
What do you think?
I think I'm being nicely maneuvered into a corner here, Lando said, a little sourly. Aside from that, whoever this commander is, he seems to be in contact with your Bothan pals. If you're trying to find out what Phalia's up to, he'd be the one to ask.
Han thought it over. Lando was right, of course. On the other hand, the whole thing could just as easily be a trap, with this talk about old friends being designed to lure him in. Still, with Irina sitting behind him with a blaster riding her hip, there wasn't really a graceful way to get out of it if she and Cena chose to press the point. They might as well be polite about it.
Okay,
he told Irina's.
What course do we set?
You don't,
she said, nodding upward. Han followed her gaze. One of the three dreadnoughts they'd passed had now swung around to fly parallel with them. Ahead, Cena's ship was heading up toward one of a pair of brightly lit docking ports.
Let me guess,
he said to Irenez.
Just relax, and let us do the flying, she said,
with the first hint of humor that he'd yet seen from her.
Right,
Han sighed. And with the flashes of the rear guard battle still going on behind them, he eased the Lady Luck up toward the docking port. Luke, he reminded himself, had apparently not sensed any treachery from Cena or her people back in the city. But then, he hadn't sensed any deceit from the Bims on Bimisari either, just before that first Nogri attack. This time the kid better be right. The first dreadnought gave a flicker of pseudo-motion and vanished into hyperspace, taking the transport and the Lady Luck with it. A few seconds later, the other two dreadnoughts ceased their ion bombardment of the Star Destroyer, and through a hail of turbolaser blasts from still-operating Imperial batteries, made their own escape. And Luke was alone. Except, of course, for the squadron of TIE fighters still chasing him. From behind him came an impatient and rather worried-sounding trill.
Okay, R2, we're going,
he assured the little droid. Reaching over, he pulled the hyperdrive lever, and the stars became starlines and turned to mottled sky, and he and R2 were safe. Luke took a deep breath, let it out in a sigh. So that was it. Han and Lando were gone to wherever Cena and her mysterious commander had taken them, and there really wasn't any way for him to track them down. Until they surfaced again and got in touch with him. He was out of the mission. But perhaps that was for the best. There was another warble from behind. A questioning one this time.
No, we're not going back to Coruscant, R2.
He told the droid. an echo of deja vu tugging at him.
We're going to a little place called Jomark to see a Jedi Master.
Chapter 9.
The little fast-attack patrol ship had dropped out of hyperspace and closed to within 100 kilometers of the Falcon before the ship's sensors even noticed its presence. By the time Leia got to the cockpit, the pilot had already made contact.
"Is that you, Kabarak?"
she called, slipping into the co-pilot's seat beside Chewbacca.
"Yes, Lady Vader,"
the Nogri's gravelly, cat-like voice mewed.
"I have come alone, as I promised. Are you also alone?"
"My companion Chewbacca is with me as pilot," she said, "as is a protocol droid. I would like to bring the droid along to help with translation, if I may. Chewbacca, as we agreed, will stay here."
The Wookiee turned to her with a growl.
"No,"
she said firmly, remembering just in time to mute the transmitter.
"I'm sorry, but that was the promise I made to Kabarak. You'll stay here on the Falcon, and that's an order."
Chewbacca growled again, more insistently this time. And with a sudden prickly sensation on the back of her neck, Leia became acutely aware of something she hadn't really thought about for years. Namely, that the Wookiee was quite capable of ignoring pretty much any order he chose to.
"I have to go alone, Chewie,"
she said in a low voice. Force of will wasn't going to work here. She was going to have to go for logic and reason.
"Don't you understand? That was the arrangement."
Chewbacca rumbled.
"No."
Leia shook her head.
"My safety isn't a matter of strength anymore. My only chance is to convince the Nogri that I can be trusted. That when I make promises, I keep them."
"The droid will pose no problem,"
Kabarak decided.
"I will bring my ship alongside for docking."
Leia switched the transmitter back on.
"Fine," she said. "I also have one case of clothing and personal items to bring along, if I may. Plus a sensor analyzer package to test the air and soil for anything that might be dangerous to me."
"The air and soil where we shall be is safe."
"I believe you,"
Leia said.
"But I am not responsible only for my own safety. I carry within me 2 new lives, and I must protect them."
The comm speaker hissed.
"Heirs of the Lord Vader."
Leia hesitated. But genetically, if not philosophically, it was true enough.
"Yes."
Another hiss.
"You may bring what you wish. I must be allowed to scan them, though. Do you bring weapons?"
"I have my lightsaber,"
Leia said.
"Are there any animals on your world dangerous enough for me to need a blaster?"
"Not anymore. Your lightsaber, too, will be acceptable."
Chewbacca snarled something quietly vicious, his wickedly curved climbing claws sliding involuntarily in and out of their fingertip sheaths. He was, Leia realized abruptly, on the edge of losing control, and perhaps of taking matters into those huge hands of his.
"What is the problem?"
Leia's stomach tightened.
"Honesty," she reminded herself. "My pilot doesn't like the idea of me going off alone with you,"
she conceded.
"He has a... well, you wouldn't understand."
"He is under a life debt to you."
Leia blinked at the speaker. She hadn't expected Kabarak to have ever heard of the Wookiee life debt, much less know anything about it.
"Yes," she said. "The original life debt was to my husband, Han Solo. During the war, Chewie extended it to include my brother and me."
"And now to the children you bear within you?"
Leia looked at Chewbacca.
"Yes."
For a long minute, the comm was silent. The patrol ship continued toward them, and Leia found herself gripping the seat arms tightly as she wondered what the Nogri was thinking. If he decided that Chewbacca's objections constituted betrayal of their arrangement.
The Wookiee Code of Honor is similar to our own,
Kaporak said at last.
He may come with you.
Chewbacca gave a throaty rumble of surprise, a surprise that slid quickly into suspicion.
Would you rather he have said you had to stay here?
Leia countered, her own surprise at the Nogri's concession quickly covered up by relief that the whole thing had been resolved so easily.
Come on, make up your mind.
The Wookiee rumbled again, but it was clear that he'd rather walk into a trap with her than let her walk into one alone.
Thank you, Kaporak. We accept,
Leia told the Nogri.
We'll be ready whenever you get here. How long will the trip to your world take, by the way?
Approximately 4 days. I await the honor of your presence aboard my ship.
The calm went silent.
4 days,
Leia thought, a shiver running up her back. 4 days in which to learn all that she could about both Kaporak and the Nogri people, and to prepare for the most important diplomatic mission of her life. As it turned out, she didn't learn much about the Nogri culture during the trip. Kaporak kept largely to himself, splitting his time between the sealed cockpit and his cabin. Occasionally he would come by to talk to Leia, but the conversations were short, and invariably left her with the uncomfortable feeling that he was still very ambivalent about his decision to bring her to his home. When they'd set up this meeting back on the Wookiee world of Kashyyyk, she had suggested that he discuss the question with friends or confidants. But as they neared the end of the voyage, and his dark nervousness grew, she began to pick up little hints that he had not, in fact, done so. The decision had been made entirely on his own. It was not, to her way of thinking, a very auspicious beginning. It implied either a lack of trust in his friends, or else a desire to absolve them from responsibility should the whole thing go sour. Either way, not exactly the sort of situation that filled her with confidence. With their host generally keeping to himself, she and Chewbacca were forced to come up with their own entertainment. For Chewbacca, with his innate mechanical interests, such entertainment consisted mainly of wandering through the ship and poking his nose into every room, access hatch, and crawlway he could find, studying the ship, as he ominously put it, in case they needed at some point to fly it themselves. Leia, for her part, spent most of the trip in her cabin with 3PO, trying to deduce a possible derivation of Malariush, the only Nogri word she knew, with the hope of at least getting some idea of where in the galaxy they might be going. Unfortunately, with 6 million languages to draw on, 3PO could come up with any number of possible etymologies for the word, ranging from reasonable to tenuous to absurd, and right back again. It was an interesting exercise in applied linguistics, but ultimately more frustrating than useful. In the middle of the 4th day, they reached the Nogri world, and it was even worse than she'd expected.
It's incredible,
she breathed, a hard knot forming in her throat as she pressed close to Chewbacca to stare through the ship's only passenger viewport at the world they were rapidly approaching. Beneath the mottling of white clouds, the planetary surface seemed to be a uniform brown, relieved only by the occasional deep blue of lakes and small oceans. No greens or yellows, no light purples or blues, none of the colors, in fact, that usually signified plant life. For all she could tell, the entire planet might have been dead. Chewbacca growled a reminder.
Yes, I know Kaporak said it had been devastated in the war,
she agreed soberly.
But I didn't realize he really meant the whole planet had been hit. She shook her head, feeling sick at heart,
wondering which side had been most responsible for this disaster. Most responsible. She swallowed hard at the reflexively defensive words. There was no most responsible here, and she knew it. Kaporak's world had been destroyed during a battle in space, and there had been only 2 sides to the war. Whatever had happened to turn this world into a desert, the Rebel Alliance could not avoid its share of the guilt.
No wonder the Emperor and Vader were able to turn them against us, she murmured.
We have to find some way to help them.
Chewbacca growled again, gestured out the viewport. The Terminator line was coming up over the horizon now, a fuzzy strip of twilight between day and night. And there, fading through to the darkness beyond, was what looked like an irregular patch of pale green.
I see it,
Leia nodded.
You suppose that's all that's left?
The Wookiee shrugged, offered the obvious suggestion.
Yes, I suppose that would be the simplest way to find out,
Leia agreed.
I really don't know if I want to ask him, though. Let's wait until we're closer and can see more of...
She felt Chewbacca go stiff beside her a split second before his bellow split the air and left her ears ringing.
What?
And then she saw it, and her stomach knotted abruptly with shock. There, just coming over the curve of the planet, was an Imperial Star Destroyer. They'd been betrayed.
No,
she breathed, staring out at the huge arrowhead shape. No mistake, it was a Star Destroyer, all right.
No, I can't believe Kabarak would do this.
The last words were spoken to empty air, and with a second shock, she realized that Chewbacca was no longer beside her. Spinning around, she saw a flash of brown as he vanished down the corridor leading to the cockpit.
No!
She shouted, pushing away from the bulkhead and taking off after him as fast as she could run.
Chewie, no!
The order was a waste of air, and she knew it. The Wookiee had murder in his heart, and he would get to Kabarak even if he had to tear down the cockpit door with his bare hands. The first clang sounded as she was halfway down the corridor. The second came as she rounded the slight curve and came within sight of the door. Chewbacca was raising his massive fist for a third blow, when to Leia's amazement, the door slid open. Chewbacca seemed surprised too, but he didn't dwell on it long. He was through the door before it was completely open, charging into the cockpit with a ululating Wookiee battle yell.
Chewie!
Leia shouted again, diving through herself. Just in time to see Kabarak, seated at the pilot station, throw up his right arm and somehow send Chewbacca spinning past him to crash with a roar into the underside of the control board. Leia skidded to a halt, not quite believing what she'd just seen.
Kabarak!
I did not call them,
the Nogri said, half turning to face her.
I did not betray my word of honor.
Chewbacca thundered his disbelief as he fought to scramble to his feet in the cramped space.
You must stop him,
Kabarak shouted over the Wookiee's roar.
Must keep him quiet. I must give the recognition signal, or all will be lost.
Leia looked past him at the distant Star Destroyer, her teeth clenched hard together.
Betrayal?
But if Kabarak had planned a betrayal, why had he let Chewbacca come along? Whatever that fighting technique was he'd used to deflect Chewbacca's first mad rush, it wasn't likely to work a second time. She focused again on Kabarak's face, on those dark eyes, protruding jaw and needle-sharp teeth. He was watching her, ignoring the threat of the enraged Wookiee behind him, his hand poised ready over the comm switch. A beep sounded from the board, and his hand twitched toward the switch before stopping again. The board beeped again.
I have not betrayed you, Lady Vader,
Kabarak repeated, a note of urgency in his voice.
You must believe me.
Leia braced herself. Chewie, be quiet, she said. Chewie! Chewie, be quiet! The Wookiee ignored the order. Finally back on his feet, he roared his war cry again and lunged for Kabarak's throat. The Nogri took the charge head on this time, grabbing Chewbacca's huge wrist in his wiry hands and holding on for all he was worth. It wasn't enough. Slowly but steadily, Kabarak's arms were bent steadily backwards as Chewbacca forced his way forward.
Chewie, I said stop!
Leia tried again.
Use your head. If he was planning a trap, don't you think he'd have timed it for when we were asleep or something?
Chewbacca spit out a growl, his hands continuing their unwavering advance.
But if he doesn't check in, they'll know something's wrong,
she countered.
That's a sure way to bring them down on us.
The Lady Vader speaks truth,
Kabarak said, his voice taut with the strain of holding back Chewbacca's hands.
I have not betrayed you, But if I give no recognition signal, you will be betrayed.
He's right, Leia said. If they come to investigate, we lose by default. Come on, Chewie, it's our only hope.
The Wookiee snarled again, shaking his head firmly.
Then you leave me no choice,
Kaparak said. And without warning, the cockpit flashed with blue lightning, dropping Chewbacca to the floor like a huge sack of grain.
What?
Leia gasped, dropping to her knees beside the motionless Wookiee.
Kaparak!
A stun weapon only,
the Nogri said, breathing rapidly as he swiveled back to his board.
A built-in defense.
Leia twisted her head to glare at him, furious at what he'd done. A fury that faded reluctantly behind the logic of the situation. Chewbacca had been fully prepared to throttle the life out of Kaparak, and from personal experience, she knew how hard it was to calm down an angry Wookiee, even when you were his friend to begin with. And Kaparak had tried talking first.
Now what?
She asked the Nogri, digging a hand through Chewbacca's thick torso hair to check his heartbeat. It was steady, which meant the stun weapon hadn't played any of its rare but potentially lethal tricks on the Wookiee's nervous system.
Now be silent,
Kaparak said, tapping his comm switch and saying something in his own language. Another mewing Nogri voice replied, and for a few minutes they conversed together. Leia remained kneeling at Chewbacca's side, wishing she'd had time to bring 3PO up before the discussion started. It would have been nice to know what the conversation was all about. But finally, it ended, and Kaparak signed off.
We are safe now,
he said, slumping a little in his seat.
They are persuaded it was an equipment malfunction.
Let's hope so,
Leia said. Kaparak looked at her, a strange expression on his nightmare face.
I have not betrayed you, Lady Vader,
he said quietly, his voice hard and yet oddly pleading.
You must believe me. I have promised to defend you, and I will, to my own death if need be.
Leia stared at him, and whether through some sensitivity of the Force or merely her own long diplomatic experience, she finally understood the position Kaparak was now in. Whatever waverings or second thoughts he might have been feeling during the voyage, the Star Destroyer's unexpected appearance had burned those uncertainties away. Kaparak's word of honor had been brought into question, and he was now in the position of having to conclusively prove that he had not broken that word. And he would have to go to whatever length such proof demanded, even if it killed him. Earlier, Leia had wondered about how Kaparak could possibly understand the concept of the Wookiee life debt. Perhaps the Nogri and Wookiee cultures were more alike than she'd realized.
I believe you,
she told him, climbing to her feet and sitting down in the co-pilot's seat. Chewbacca, she would have to leave where he was until he was awake enough to help her move him.
What now?
Kaparak turned back to his board.
Now we must make a decision,
he said.
My intention had been to bring you to ground in the city of Nisteo, waiting until full dark to present you to my clan Dynas. But that is now impossible. Our Imperial Lord has come, and is holding a convocate of the Dynasts.
The back of Leia's neck tinkled.
Your Imperial Lord is the Grand Admiral?
She asked carefully.
Yes, that is his flagship, the Chimera. I remember the day that the Lord Darth Vader first brought him to us,
he added, his mewing voice becoming reflective.
The Lord Vader told us that his duties against the Emperor's enemies would now be taking his full attention. That the Grand Admiral would henceforth be our Lord and Commander.
He made a strange, almost purring sound deep in his chest.
Ah. There were many who were sad that day. The Lord Vega had been the only one, save the Emperor, who cared for Nogri well-being. He had given us hope and purpose.
Leia grimaced. That purpose being to go off and die as death commandos at the Emperor's whim. But she couldn't say things like that to Kabarak. Not yet, anyway.
Yes,
she murmured. At her feet, Chewbacca twitched.
He will be fully awake soon,
Kabarak said.
I would not like to stun him again. Can you control him?
I think so,
Leia said. They were coming in low toward the upper atmosphere now, on a course that would take them directly beneath the orbiting Star Destroyer.
I hope they don't decide to do a sensor focus on us, she murmured. If they pick up 3 life forms here, you're going to have a lot of explaining to do.
The ship's static damping should prevent that,
Kabarak assured her.
It is at full power.
Leia frowned.
Aren't they likely to wonder about that?
No. I explained it was part of the same malfunction that caused the transmitter problem.
There was a low rumble from Chewbacca, and Leia looked down to see the Wookiee's eyes glaring impotently up at her. Fully alert again, but without enough motor control yet to do anything.
We've cleared outer control,
she told him.
We're heading down to... Where are we going, Kabarak?
The Nogri took a deep breath, let it out in an odd sort of whistle.
We will go to my home, a small village near the edge of Cleanland. I will hide you there until our lord, the Grand Admiral, leaves.
Leia thought about that. A small village situated off the mainstream of Nogri life ought to be safely out of the way of wandering Imperials. On the other hand, if it was anything like the small villages she'd known, her presence there would be common knowledge an hour after they put down.
Can you trust the other villagers to keep quiet?
Do not worry,
Kabarak said.
I will keep you safe.
But he hesitated before he said it. And as they headed into the atmosphere, Leia noted uneasily that he hadn't really answered the question. The Dynast bowed one last time and stepped back to the line of those awaiting their turn to pay homage to their leader. Thrawn, seated in the gleaming high seat of the common room of Honegger, nodded gravely to the departing clan leader and motioned to the next. The other stepped forward, moving in the formalized dance that seemed to indicate respect, and bowed his forehead to the ground before the Grand Admiral. Standing 2 meters to Thrawn's right, and a little behind him, Pelion shifted his weight imperceptibly between feet, stifled a yawn, and wondered when this ritual would be over. He'd been under the impression they'd come to Honegger to try to inspire the commando teams, but so far the only Nogri they'd seen had been ceremonial guards, and this small but excessively boring collection of clan leaders. Thrawn presumably had his reasons for wading through the ritual, but Pelion wished it would hurry up and be over. With a galaxy still to win back for the Empire, sitting here listening to a group of gray-skinned aliens drone on about their loyalty seemed a ridiculous waste of time. There was a touch of air on the back of his neck.
Captain?
Someone said quietly in his ear. Lieutenant Tichelle. He tentatively identified the voice.
Excuse me, sir, but Grand Admiral Thrawn asked to be informed immediately if anything out of the ordinary happened.
Pelion nodded slightly, glad of any interruption.
What is it?
It doesn't seem dangerous, sir, or even very important,
Tichelle said.
A Nogri commando ship on its way in almost didn't give the recognition response in time.
Equipment trouble, probably,
Pelion said.
That's what the pilot said,
Tichelle told him.
The odd thing is that he begged off putting down at the Nisteo landing area. You'd think that someone with equipment problems would want his ship looked at immediately.
A bad transmitter isn't exactly a crisis-level problem,
Pelion grunted. But Tashel had a point, and Nisteo was the only place on Honegger with qualified spaceship repair facilities.
We have an ID on the pilot?
Yes, sir. His name's Kabarak, Clan Kimbar. I pulled up what we have on him,
he added, offering Pelion a data pad. Surreptitiously, Pelion took it, wondering what he should do now. Thrawn had indeed left instructions that he was to be notified of any unusual activity anywhere in the system, but to interrupt the ceremony for something so trivial didn't seem like a good idea. As usual, Thrawn was one step ahead of him. Lifting a hand, he stopped the Nogri Clan Dynast presentation and turned his glowing red eyes on
Pelion. You have something to report, Captain? A small anomaly only, sir,
Pelion told him, steeling himself and stepping to the Grand Admiral's side.
An incoming commando ship was slow to transmit its recognition signal, and then declined to put down at the Nisteo landing area. Probably just an equipment problem.
Probably, Thrawn agreed. Was the ship scanned for evidence of malfunction?
Pelion checked the data pad.
The scan was inconclusive,
he told the other.
The ship's static dampening was strong enough to block...
The incoming ship was static damped,
Thrawn interrupted, looking sharply up at Pelion.
Yes, sir.
Wordlessly, Thrawn held up a hand. Pelion gave him the data pad, and for a moment the Grand Admiral frowned down at it, skimming the report.
Kabarak, Clan Kimbar, he murmured to himself. Interesting.
He looked up at Pelion again.
Where did the ship go?
Pelion looked in turn at Tashel.
According to the last report, it was headed south,
the lieutenant said.
It might still be in range for our tractor beam, sir.
Pelion turned back to Thrawn.
Shall we try to stop it, Admiral?
Thrawn looked down at the data pad, his face tight with concentration.
No, he said at last. Let it land, but track it, and order a tech team from the Chimera to meet us at the ship's final destination.
His eyes searched the line of Nogri Dynasts, came to rest on one of them.
Dynaster Chaim, Clan Kimbar, step forward.
The Nogri did so.
What is your wish, my lord?
He mewed.
One of your people has come home,
Thrawn said.
We go to his village to welcome him.
Erheim bowed.
At my lord's request.
Thrawn stood up.
Order the shuttle to be prepared, Captain,
he told Pelion.
We leave at once.
Yes, sir,
Pelion said, nodding the order onto Lieutenant Tashel.
Wouldn't it be easier, sir, to have the ship and pilot brought here to us?
Easier, perhaps,
Thrawn acknowledged.
But possibly not as illuminating. You obviously didn't recognize the pilot's name. But Kabarak, Clan Kimbar, was once part of Commando Team 22. Does that jog any memories?
Pelion felt his stomach tighten.
That was the team that went after Leia Organa Solo on Kashyyyk.
And of which team only Kabarak still survives.
Thrawn nodded.
I think it might be instructive to hear from him the details of that failed mission, and to find out why it's taken him this long to return home.
Thrawn's eyes glittered. And to find out, he added quietly,
just why he's trying so hard to avoid us.
Chapter 10
It was full dark by the time Kabarak brought the ship to ground in his village, a tight-grouped cluster of huts with brightly lit windows.
Do ships land here often?
Leia asked, as Kabarak pointed the ship toward a shadowy structure standing apart near the center of the village. In the glare of the landing lights, the shadow became a large cylindrical building with a flat cone-shaped roof, the circular wall composed of massive vertical wooden pillars alternating with a lighter, shimmery wood. Just beneath the eaves, she caught a glint of a metal band encircling the entire building.
It is not common,
Kabarak said, cutting the repulsor lifts and running the ship's systems down to standby.
Neither is it unheard of.
In other words, it was probably going to attract a fair amount of attention. Chewbacca, who had recovered enough for Leia to help into one of the cockpit passenger seats, was obviously thinking along the same lines.
The villagers are all close family of the clan Kimbar,
Kabarak said in answer to the Wookiee's slightly slurred question.
They will accept my promise of protection as their own. Come.
Leia unstrapped and stood up, suppressing a grimace as she did so.
But they were here now, and she could only hope that Kabarak's confidence was more than just the unfounded idealism of youth.
She helped Chewbacca unstrap, and together they followed the Nogri back toward the main hatchway, collecting 3PO from her cabin on the way.
I must go first,
Kabarak said as they reached the exit.
By custom, I must approach alone to the Dooka of the clan Kimbar upon arrival. By law, I'm required to announce out-clan visitors to the head of my family.
I understand, Leia said, fighting back a fresh surge of uneasiness.
She didn't like this business of Kabarak having conversations with his fellow Nogri that she wasn't in on. Once again, there wasn't a lot she could do about it.
We'll wait here until you come and get us.
I will be quick,
Kabarak promised. He palmed the door release twice, slipping outside as the panel slid open and then shut again. Chewbacca growled something unintelligible under his breath.
He'll be back soon,
Leia soothed him, making a guess as to what was bothering the Wookiee.
I'm certain he's telling the truth,
3PO added helpfully.
Customs and rituals of this sort are very common among more socially primitive pre-spaceflight cultures.
Except that this culture isn't pre-spaceflight,
Leia pointed out, her hand playing restlessly with the grip of her lightsaber as she stared at the closed hatchway in front of her. Kabarak could at least have left the door open so they would be able to see when he was coming back. Unless, of course, he didn't want them to see when he was coming back.
That is evident, Your Highness. I feel certain, however, that their status in that regard has been changed only well.
He broke off as Chewbacca abruptly pushed past him and lumbered back toward the center of the ship.
Where are you going?
Leia called after the Wookiee. His only reply was some comment about the Imperials that she wasn't quite able to catch.
Chewie, get back here,
she snapped.
Kabarak will be back any minute.
This time the Wookiee didn't bother to answer.
Great,
Leia muttered, trying to decide what to do. If Kabarak came back and found Chewbacca gone, but if he came back and found both of them gone?
As I was saying,
3PO went on, apparently deciding that the actions of rude Wookiees were better left ignored.
All evidence I have gathered so far about this culture indicates that they were, until recently, a non-spacefaring people. Kabarak's reference to the Dooka, obviously a clan center of some sort, the familial and clan structures themselves, plus this whole preoccupation with your perceived royal status.
The High Court of Alderaan had a royal hierarchy too,
Leia reminded him tartly, still looking back along the empty corridor. No, she decided she and 3PO had better stay here and wait for Kabarak.
Most other people in the galaxy didn't consider us to be socially primitive.
No, of course not,
3PO said, sounding a little embarrassed.
I didn't mean to imply any such thing.
I know,
Leia assured him, a little embarrassed herself at jumping on 3PO like that. She'd known what he meant.
Where is he, anyway?
The question had been rhetorical, but even as she voiced it, the hatchway abruptly slid open again.
Come,
Kabarak said. His dark eyes flicked over Leia and 3PO.
Where is the Wookiee?
He went back into the ship,
Leia told him.
I don't know why. Do you want me to go and find him?
Kabarak made a sound halfway between a hiss and a purr.
There is no time,
he said.
The Matriarch is waiting. come.
Turning, he started back down the ramp.
Any idea how long it will take you to pick up the language?
Leia asked 3PO as they followed.
I really cannot say, Your Highness,
the droid answered, as Kabarak led them across a dirt courtyard, past the large wooden building they'd seen on landing. The Clan Dooka, Leia decided. One of the smaller structures beyond it seemed to be their goal.
Learning an entirely new language would be difficult indeed. However, if it is similar to any of the 6 million forms of communication with which I am familiar...
I understand. Leia cut him off. They were almost to the lighted building now, and as they approached, a pair of short Nogri standing in the shadows pulled open the double doors for them. Taking a deep breath, Leia followed Kabarak inside. From the amount of light coming through the windows, she would have expected the building's interior to be uncomfortably bright. To her surprise, the room they entered was actually darker than it had been immediately outside. A glance to the side showed why. The brightly lit windows were in fact standard self-powered lighting panels, with the operational sides facing outward. Except for a small amount of spillage from the panels, the interior of the building was lit only by a pair of floating wick lamps. 3PO's assessment of the society echoed through her mind. Apparently, he'd known what he was talking about. In the center of the room, standing silently in a row facing her, were 5 Nogri. Leia swallowed hard, sensing somehow that the first word should be theirs. Kabarak stepped to the Nogri in the center and dropped to his knees, ducking his head to the floor and splaying out his hands to his sides. The same gesture of respect, she remembered, that he'd extended to her back in the Kashyyyk holding cell.
Ilyarush, Milaxpolai,
he said.
Mila Karasiv, Malari Ush, Vira Veda Ush.
Can you understand it?
Leia murmured to 3PO.
To a degree. It appears to be a dialect of the ancient trade language.
Shava!
The Nogri in the center of the line spat. 3PO recoiled.
She said, quiet,
he translated unnecessarily.
I understood the gist,
Leia said, drawing herself up and bringing the full weight of her royal Alderaanian court upbringing to bear on the aliens facing her. Deference to local custom and authority was all well and good, but she was the daughter of their lord, Darth Vader, and there were certain discourtesies that such a person should not put up with.
Is this how you speak to the Malari Ush?
She demanded. 6 Nogri heads snapped over to look at her. Reaching out with the Force, Leia tried to read the sense behind those gazes. But as always, this particular alien mind seemed totally closed to her. She was going to have to play it by ear.
I asked a question,
she said into the silence. The Nogri in the center took a step forward. And with the motion, Leia noticed for the first time the 2 small hard bumps on the alien's upper chest beneath the loose tunic. A female?
Matrak?
She murmured to 3PO, remembering the word Kabarak had used earlier.
A female who is leader of a local family or subclan structure,
the droid translated, his voice nervous and almost too low to hear. 3PO hated being yelled at.
Thank you,
Leia said, eyeing the Nogri.
You are the Matrak of this family.
I am she,
the Nogri said in a heavily accented but understandable basic.
What proof do you offer to your claim of Malari Ush?
Silently, Leia held out her hand. The Matrak hesitated, then stepped up to her and gingerly sniffed it.
Is it not as I said?
Kabarak asked.
Be silent, third son,
the Matrak said, raising her head to stare into Leia's eyes.
I greet you, Lady Veda, but I do not welcome you.
Leia held her gaze steadily. She could still not sense anything from any of the aliens, but with her thoughts extended, she could tell that Chewbacca had left the ship and was approaching the house, approaching rather rapidly and with a definite agitation about him.
She hoped he wouldn't charge brashly in and ruin what little civility remained here.
May I ask why not?
She asked the Matrak.
Did you serve the Emperor?
The other countered.
Do you now serve our Lord, the Grand Admiral?